It was August of 1978. Our shift started at 10:30, and as I left the sheriff's office to head out into my area, I got a call to go to a house on Lincoln Street East, which is Route 30, US 30. And when I got out of the car and met the people at the house, who were obviously distressed, what they described to me was hearing rocks or something hit the roof of their house.
When we first started seeing it, it was, I would say, between 6 and 7 foot tall, covered in hair. It still had facial features. It wasn't completely like a rag mop, you know, over the face and everything. But it probably weighed a good 400 to 500 pounds, I'd say, maybe more, you know, muscular. Because you could see it wasn't like...
A little bit of the movie The Minerva Monster, which is set to be released. We have with us the director, Seth Breedlove, on the phone with us this morning. Good morning, Seth.
Good morning. How are you doing?
All right, let's go back to 1978. What was going on? What happened?
Yeah, that's kind of the question, right? A lot of people think there was a Bigfoot, some sort of upright walking, hair-covered creature roaming around Minerva, Ohio that year. So if you're asking what the actual story was, the big story, the story that ran in the papers and was covered by national media, was the story of the Caton family, who lived right outside of Minerva, about a mile outside of Minerva on the historic Lincoln Highway. Their house butted up against an old strip mine hill, and during that particular summer and over a year before, some sort of creature was hanging around their property, basically. And what happened is, in August of 1978, like you could hear in the trailer at the beginning, there was an incident that kind of kicked off with the Catons finding their beloved family dog ripped out of its collar with its neck snapped. And the following evening, there was an incident where this creature came down off the hill with two smaller creatures behind it, and the family happened to be outside at the time. There was about 6 or 7 people outside, maybe more. There were children present. On the police report, there's 7 names. But they called the Stark County Sheriff's Department. Stark County Sheriff's Department came out and investigated the mysterious surroundings and what was going on. And basically, for the next few weeks, there were multiple sightings from multiple people. The Catons seemed to be at the center of everything. And the national media showed up. There was Bigfoot hunters roaming around the Catons' house with beer and shotguns, trying to kill themselves a monster, quote-unquote monster. And it's this amazing piece of Ohio seems to be kind of forgotten today.
Seth, do we have any pictures of this or any other physical evidence of the creature itself?
You know what? The most intriguing piece of evidence is the accounts of the witnesses. Obviously, it's not, you know, it's circumstantial evidence, but we have that. There were hair samples found in 78 that were passed off. I'm not sure what happened to those hair samples. There was also an unidentifiable jawbone that was found that was given to Malone University, and Malone University subsequently lost it. So this is one of those things where you just kind of have to go off of the witness accounts and try to piece together what happened, what was going on. I can say there had been unusual animal sightings in that area before, not necessarily Bigfoots, but there had been black bear in the area before and things like that. But the sheriff himself told us this was no black bear. There were no markings of a black bear anywhere in the area. There was no evidence of a black bear being present. So even the sheriff didn't think it was a bear.
Seth, what sparked your interest in this and the production of a motion picture?
I've been interested in Bigfoot probably for about 12 years now. Not necessarily. I think when I first got it was just the idea of, well, what if there's this unknown creature roaming around right outside our our biggest cities and towns. And I grew up about 15 minutes from Minerva, and I had never heard of this particular story. So that was probably what kind of made me gravitate toward the Minerva story, is that it was a huge event in Ohio history. You know, you have media here from all over the world. There were news stations from Asia and Germany. And so I was fascinated by that. And I just think the story itself and the people at the center of the story are so interesting. What kind of made me want to make it into a movie is that originally I had put this together as part of a book proposal that I was doing. And the proposal went out to about four or five different publishers, and all of them kind of turned it down because they were running other Bigfoot books at the time. A couple of them wanted me to come back with the book proposal in about a year. And that was about 2 years ago. And last summer ran into my sisters, Alan McGargle and Morgan, and they had, you know, all the equipment necessary to make a movie. They had their own production company kind of set up. And so we set out to about this particular story because, to me, it's close to home. We didn't have to do a ton of traveling to get it. And I knew I had already done so much of the research because of the book. So together it's been this insane adventure. I mean, it's been a learning process like you wouldn't believe, but it's been an insane adventure that's gone now for, I mean, we're at 8 months in terms of film production, but I've been working with this story for years.
We're talking today with Seth Breedlove, filmmaker. The film is Minerva Monster. This is set up as a sort of a documentary reenacting. What kind of a technique do you use to kind of tell the story of this?
Totally documentary style. There's so many of these kind of unusual event documentaries and docudramas that run on TV now, and typically the way they approach that is to these very over-dramatized recreations, you know, with horror movie music playing and people screaming and ridiculous-looking men in horrible fur suits running through the woods. And We kind of wanted to steer clear of that and let's be, you know, I've started describing it almost as like a travelogue meets a cold case detective show. It's very matter of fact. You're going to get the pieces of the puzzle from the witnesses, and then it's kind of up to us, the audience, to piece it together and put together what happened. Because I don't think there's any one clear definable answer for every single thing that happened in Minerva.
Well, this story got legitimacy because it was printed as a front page news on the Akron Beacon Journal, which kind of is a starting point back from 78 as a good resource, because obviously the internet was not able to, at that point, to have everybody come out and post their own pictures that they got or whatever. But how were you able to kind of get a hold of some of these people? Were they willing to talk? Are there still some that are thinking, I really don't want to tell you about this because it's going to start all over again of what people think of me? What was that like, getting those people involved in this film?
Yeah, it's actually a lot harder than you'd think. 78 doesn't seem like that long ago, but you know, what we ran into was that some of the witnesses have passed away. Some of them are just, you know, in aging, you know, the typical elderly health, unable to talk. Howie Caton, who spoke to us, is one of the original sighting witnesses. He's, as far as I know, he's never been on film talking about the event. So we landed him, and that was a difficult one. We had to spend a lot of time. Howie's fear was that there would be kind of a repeat of what happened in 78, which was that the town kind of, not the whole town itself, I'm not trying to stereotype the town, but a lot of people in the town kind of turned on the Caton family, and they were ridiculed for the event, you know, people chanting Bigfoot at and stuff like that. So he didn't want a repeat of that. So getting him to trust us, to know that we weren't out to make some sort of crazy horror movie, we're not out to make an over dramatization of the real events that happened, was a chore. The rest of them are just, you got to track down phone numbers and make phone calls. And then what happened is, as we're filming and people start to hear about the movie, then more witnesses come forward, people who had had sightings in 78, you know, and they want to tell us their sighting. I mean, we're still getting phone calls and emails today from witnesses who would, you know, like to tell us their story. So it's an ongoing process. I mean, I don't see there being a lack of Minerva witnesses coming forward anytime soon.
Right, you can make an extended epilogue to this film probably, even while you're editing it to the time.
Four-hour director's cut.
Exactly. Speaking of making a movie like this, I understand you also benefited from a Kickstarter campaign. Is that the direction that many filmmakers are going? Is that the way that the backing for films of these days seem to be coming about?
You know, it's a real resource. If you're an independent filmmaker and you don't have the money to front for it, I highly recommend going the Kickstarter route. It does seem like a lot of smaller and even bigger movies are doing it. For us, it was kind of crazy because we pretty much put the Kickstarter up to offset the cost of printing the DVDs. So we ended up setting our goal pretty low, and it made over 1,200% of the goal. So, I mean, that was a shock for us, but I kind of attribute that to a few factors. One is the Ohio Bigfoot Conference, where we're premiering the movie. They have a pretty big following, and through social media and stuff like that, you know, you can get a pretty big group of people that want to support what you're doing. And the other thing is just, I think there's a hunger out there for this type of entertainment where it takes the subject seriously. It doesn't necessarily want to make it into a sideshow, you know, and actually try to get to the bottom of what's going on. And also just as a history, a forgotten history show. That's kind of what we set out to make. So the Kickstarter route, definitely a direction I think filmmakers and indie filmmakers should go, especially little local guys like us.
Seth, you've got this one going on the big screen. Any other projects in the pipeline?
As of right now, we are working Small Town Monsters, which would be the series that Minerva Monster will be a part of. We're still trying to figure out what story to tell. We don't want to just jump into the next movie. So we might be in Ohio. We might be outside of Ohio on the next one. It's hard to say right now.
There's a lot of things in Ohio that have happened over the years that people would think are strange but true, so to speak. And so there's a lot of things to find here in the Ohio area. Again, it's Minerva Monster, our guest today has been Seth Breedlove. Seth, where are people going to be able to see this or get a hold of it, or what's your distribution plan for this film?
Yeah, it launches on May 16th at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference as the official premiere. There's a Minerva Monster Day being held in Minerva at the Roxy Theater, and actually in downtown Minerva in general, there will be vendors and speakers. They're kind of making it into a mini festival. That's on June 6th. And then you can buy the movie through grassmangear.com right now. You can pre-order, and you'll be able to order it on May 16th. That's Grassman Gear. So let me think. Vimeo and Amazon should be streaming. I'm not sure about Amazon yet, but Vimeo should be streaming pretty much as soon as it goes live on May 16th.
That sounds great. It's a great way this distribution for filmmakers these days now can kind of reach everyone in different directions and however they want to view the film. Again, it's the Minerva Monster. Seth Breedlove, our guest this morning. Thanks for sharing the story. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.